Life's good.
Never on.
Whoa.
Hard. Hard reset.
Come on, Brent.
Life's good.
Got real close.
The hair high, right?
Trying to hit two thirds.
Have they saved it for her? Yes, they have.
Welcome to Game of Stones, everybody. I am Sean Graham, Scott Knott, alongside, as always, he is off trying to recreate, pitch by pitch, the 18-inning World Series game in RBI baseball, which is a great challenge, but he is giving that one a go, so I am flying solo today on the show, but have no fear, there will be another voice alongside, as I reached out to the CEO of Goldline Curling, Pete Townsend, following the company's acquisition of Hardline over the course of the summer. I believe that was announced back in July. And I wanted to talk with Pete about the impact of the acquisition of Hardline on the rec level player. What would this mean for people in terms of getting equipment? Why are they keeping the Hardline branding? And then also to get in a little bit about how products are developed for rec level players when compared to some of the elite level players, what you should look for in equipment if you're just starting, if you've been playing for a while, if you're, you know, once or twice a week player, how do you make sure that you're using the right equipment? And some of the questions that they ask themselves in terms of product development and manufacturing and how you cater to that rec level player. So Pete was nice enough to join me, very generous with his time, and I greatly appreciated that. Really enjoyed this discussion, went in some areas that I didn't necessarily expect to get into, especially at the end when we talk a little bit about head protection and helmets and the hats that have some padding in them. But really appreciate Pete's thoughts on that and really Pete's thoughts on everything as it relates to curling equipment at the recreational level. So without any further ado, let's get right into my chat with Goldline and Hardline CEO Pete Townsend. All right, and Pete Townsend joins me now. How are you doing today, Pete?
I'm doing great, Sean. How about yourself?
Doing really well. Thanks so much for joining me today. Talk a little bit about the acquisition of Hardline by Goldline and the implications for the rec level curlers. But before we get into the core of what we want to talk about here, just a little bit about your background and like, how does one become the CEO of a curling manufacturer?
So yeah, it was a little bit of a roundabout way to get here. You might know that my business partner, Erin, she's been in the business basically her whole life. Her grandfather actually started Goldline. And I've known Erin literally since preschool. So we go way back. And there was a period of time where, you know, she was here working with her dad, Doug, and they were running the company. And I was just doing freelance stuff with them and, you know, helping out with their website and a couple things here and there. And I was working for an online marketing company. And when that company, my position was changing and I had a chance to either step back into just a sales role and stay here in the Toronto area, or I could move down to their head office in Texas. And so I was talking to Erin about that and she was like, hey, you should come join us, work here at Goldline. And so I did. And yeah, things just went incredibly well. It was a really good fit for myself. I have a pretty diverse background and as a result, set of skills. And I can't imagine a role where I was able to slot in more perfectly and just leverage a whole bunch of different skills and do different things all the time that I love doing and worked really well here at the company. And everything just sort of rolled on from there. So when Doug decided to retire in 2018. Erin and myself and our other business partner, Andrew, decided to buy him out. And there you go. So now it's the three of us that own Goldline.
And before you got into the company and the way you have, what was your experience with the sport itself? Like, did you play growing up, play recreational? Like, were you a fan before you got involved in the business side?
Yeah, I wish I had played more because I grew up watching everything, like obsessively watching everything on TV about it. And it's one of those stories where I always try and and highlight this as being a gap in hurling, that we've got these fans out there who just watch it all the time and, like me, might not realize they've got multiple curling clubs just up the road. I had two of them 15 minutes away, and I could have picked it up at any time. And it wasn't until I was in my 20s that Aaron finally invited me out, and I got to give it a try and absolutely loved it from day one. Wish I'd been playing longer, but I have been playing for a number of years now, and I play twice a week at this point.
Okay, so that's one of those things. I always wonder, like, is it better to be a fan and then go do it, or to like do it as a kid and then become a fan? Because you're in a position where if you've watched it for years and years and years and you show up in your 20s, you at least kind of know the basics. Like, you know the rules, you know what it should look like when you come out of the hack, even if you might not be able to do it perfectly. Like, that, there's got to be some benefit to that.
So there is, but the one thing I had to be really careful of is what I knew of curling was not your recreational level curling. It was the TV curling. And so I come out there and I'm like, I see this shot. I've seen them make this shot on TV. I can make this shot. And you know what? I can't always make that shot. But I can call it and I can see that it's there.
Yeah, that's we call that the March phenomena. Every year in March, that's when it really starts at the club level, those shots. So, so let's get into this a little bit. Over the summer, Goldline acquired Hardline. And these were two distinct companies that were totally separate. So what made Hardline an appealing acquisition for you guys?
Well, I think it has been in our ethos since we took over Goldline that the number one focus of our company should be in making the best quality equipment that we could make. And frankly, that's what Hardline is known for. Hardline is known for making the best quality stuff out there. And so it made a lot of sense for us that would be a good fit for our product line. And we happen to be aware of the fact that, you know, Archie and Hratch, who Archie having started Hardline and Hratch, his brother, coming in and working with him for a number of years, they were getting to the point where they were looking to retire from the industry. And so it just seemed like a natural fit. They were looking for somebody to take over, and it was a good fit of product line for us. And so it just made a lot of sense.
Now, I don't expect you to give me any numbers or anything in terms of that sort of proprietary stuff, but just process-wise, was this a relatively quick thing that happened? Like, what were the conversations like? And, I think obviously an announcement in the summer kind of makes a lot of sense given the ebbs and flows of the curling business, but just like what kind of timeline were we looking at for you guys to complete this?
It took quite a while. Yeah, I don't know if I necessarily want to get into all the details of exactly how long it took, but it was not something that just came together overnight or was relatively quick. Even once we got to the point where we were like, yes, we definitely have a deal and we all agree on the basic principles of it. Once you get lawyers and accountants and everybody involved, that process is not fast and it takes quite a while. So yeah, it took a while.
Yeah. You know, there's been a lot of talk, and you did an interview with John Cullen. There's a story when this happened about kind of the impact on the elite level players, the contracts, the sponsorships, all that. I want to focus and drill down a little bit more on the rec level side of the sport. And I would recommend everybody to go read the John Cullen article as it relates to some of the impact on the elite level players. But one of the things that I think a lot of folks would immediately think about when they think of two companies coming together or one company acquiring the other in a relatively small market. There's not that many competitors in the curling business. And now one company acquires the other. So for you, how would you address anybody who has the concern or the question of how the acquisition might impact product availability for rec players?
Yeah, I mean, if anything, it should make it easier to buy the equipment, right? Because that's one of the areas that Goldline has always excelled. And this is from far beyond before my days with the company, but Goldline always excelled at product availability and connecting with all of the right pro shops and retail outlets and everything, and having a solid web presence and multiple stores that are proper Goldline storefronts and making sure that product is available. And so we want to make sure that we continue to leverage all of those sales channels and make sure that it is easy for people to get the Hardline product, just as it's always been easy to get the Goldline product. So I'm not really concerned. I think it will be really good from a product availability standpoint, for sure.
Was there any ever discussion of folding in the Hardline products under the Gold Line umbrella in terms of the actual branding of it?
Yeah. So there was a lot of very healthy discussion about how should we go about merging the two entities together, and does it become a Gold Line product line, or how do we want to do that? And we sort of realized that they are two distinct brands, right? Like if you go back and you look at how Hratch and Archie promoted Hardline over the years, it had a very different look and feel and brand voice and everything compared to what our approach at Goldline has been. And we want to continue to be true to that. And so we did land on this strategy that, you know, the company is Goldline, but there is still Hardline products and there are Goldline products, and they are distinct product lines, and they go through even different channels. So like if you go to hardlinecurling.com, you'll see a different website than if you go to goldlinecurling.com. And that's always going to be our strategy going forward, is that they are two distinct brands. You just have access to both brands through any of those channels.
For you as the CEO of this entity now, when you're talking about, say, the products themselves, the development of the products, are we still talking about, when we're thinking Hardline, their processes, the people who were involved in that? How involved are any of those folks compared to the Gold Line staff? Like, how integrated are we talking about in terms of sort of that back end design phase?
Yeah, so Ratch and Archie were really the two guys who ran Hardline. It was really just the two of them. So with this deal, they've both decided to move on and retire. But everybody who was involved in developing those products are people who were more at the manufacturing level. And we're still partnered with all of the same manufacturers and all the same product developers and everybody who made the Hardline product as good as they are. So we're not looking to try and totally disrupt that and move those products away into new areas or get rid of any of those products or anything. You know, they did a lot of things very well, so we're not looking to mess with that. Right. We want to make sure that we're leveraging the good things that they were doing and continue to build on them.
Now, in terms of the storefront, you mentioned that, and Goldline, you're right. I think Goldline has been the gold standard in terms of actual storefronts for players across the country, certainly in my experience. How important is that physical presence in 2025, though, where obviously I would imagine you get a fair share of online purchases, and when it comes to brooms and that kind of stuff, I don't know how important the tactile being in the store is. I'm sure for some people it's more important than others, and shoes, I would say, is pretty important to try them on. But in terms of maintaining that storefront versus online, where's the balance for you guys in kind of making that priority of having people be able to come in, try on stuff, feel stuff versus just the click and ship?
Yeah, it's extremely important. Like, there is a subset of consumers who are always totally comfortable. They just go onto a website. It doesn't even matter if it's shoes or apparel or whatever. They'll go in, just, they don't need to touch and feel. They can buy it online and they're totally happy to do so. But there have been studies that have gone back for years. One in particular that I remember seeing from Canadian Tire, who's a retail partner of ours, they did a pretty in-depth study of the Canadian marketplace. And Canadian consumers are generally, when it comes to sporting goods or shoes, they're very happy to research online, get familiar with the products that are out there, see what they might be interested in. But when it comes to the purchase, the physical touch and feel really is hard to replicate or to replace. So having physical storefronts is important. And even more important is the wholesale network that we're connected with. So there's, you know, anybody who's got a curling pro shop, we're going to be in there making sure that our products are available. And then we've also got, in addition to Canadian Tire, we're partnering with Sport Check and Team Town Sports and a whole host of other retail channels. And the purpose of that is that we've got to make sure that people can touch and feel and try on those products before they buy them.
Now, you mentioned the clubs and people with pro shops. There are however many hundreds of clubs across the country, some of which the pro shop is like a pro shop and it's a room and you can try stuff on. Other pro shops are a window or, you know, the maintenance closet with three extra rooms behind it. So how difficult is it for you to maintain those relationships, especially with so many clubs being volunteer clubs, and just having that outreach and having a presence in clubs across the country?
Yeah. Not just volunteers, but also volunteers who turn over every year or every few years. So yeah, there's a lot of education and everything that goes on there, and a lot of handholding that goes on there. And, you know, I'll say how hard is it for me? Well, it's very easy for me, but that's because I'm really lucky that I've got an excellent team that I'm working with. So I mentioned my business partner, Andrew. He heads up our sales division. And if you were ever in our offices and you heard him, he's just on the phone or on video calls all day long, talking with different club managers and getting them used to it. We've got my wife, actually, Mandy, is our head of customer experience. And so she also runs a customer service team, and they field calls all the time. And so, there's a lot of that we've got to do, that we've got to educate people on what are the products that you should carry, what's the difference from year to year. But then sometimes it's just as simple as, like, this is how you actually order from us. And if you're a volunteer and you're new and there's been turnover, then yes, you're a club, so you've got a wholesale account with us. You get special pricing, and you can sell that product then to your members so that you can have an extra profit center for your club as well, which is always good in our industry as well. So yeah, there's a lot of that that's going on.
Yeah, especially in places that maybe are a little more rural, have harder access to some of the storefronts. That gives the players the opportunity to actually, as that tactile experience of purchasing, but also, yeah, some extra revenue for clubs in smaller communities never hurts the facility for sure. Now, I'm curious to talk a little bit about the development of products for rec level players compared to the elite level players. And that maybe this is unfair, but I always got the impression that Hardline targeted more elite level players, whereas I think you guys in Asham and some of the other companies, Balance Plus, are a little more focused, like rec level, with hopefully getting some elite level players as well. That's my impression. Feel free to tell me if I'm wrong on that. But, you know, Hardline, I always felt, like I said, really was targeted, those wanted the elite level players, wanted to be the broomhead at the Olympics with all the teams and all that. But from a product development standpoint, is there any difference in developing products, selling products for rec level curlers versus the elite players?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think, as you would see with any product, we need to make it available at different tiers. And sometimes that is a budgetary concern for people, that they need to get something that, you know, is just a little bit easier for them to purchase and to get into their locker. But we're always focused on trying to make the best quality product that we can, and then create tiers within that, you know, okay, so maybe your handle's a little bit heavier, or maybe you don't have that grip. And so it's still a very good product. It still performs extremely well at the recreational level, but it's some of the bells and whistles that we strip away in order to make it a little bit more accessible for people. And that is extremely important. If you were to look across not only just the whole Gold Line product lineup, but the Gold Line product lineup and now all the Hardline product lineup, we actually probably sell more Gold Line fiber light brooms than any of the other brooms as individual product lines. And that's because it is a really good sweet spot for that recreational curler. And the recreational curler, there's simply more of them, and they need more access to it. So we always look at performance first, and then we look at, okay, now how do we make a version that is more accessible for the recreational curler as well?
Is there anything, I'm thinking specifically in shoes, like, should there be a difference between what, like, the pros wear and what the rec level player wears? Like, I think for sure on the slider, right? I don't think any rec level player, with maybe a few minor exceptions, should probably ever have a steel slider. But, you know, your elite level players can get away with that. But in terms of some of the other product lines, or maybe even if there's something in shoes that you can think of, should there be a difference in what is available to the pros versus what twice a week club player should have access to?
So, I mean, it's a really good question, and one that I'm looking at in a lot of detail. Like, And I know everybody always focuses on the brooms and how exciting those are and how prevalent they are, but I am a sneakerhead. Like, I love making shoes, designing shoes, and developing them. And so, yes, traditionally, the biggest difference has been, as you pointed out in the slide, right? And my perspective is steel, yes, might be a little extreme for most recreational curlers. But beyond that, everybody should get the fastest slider that works within their budget. Like, you're going to be better, even as a brand new curler, if you're on a proper quarter inch slider than if you're on something slower. And I use my wife as an example because she came from Florida, had never been on any ice surface, let alone curling, until I got her up here to Canada and got her on the ice. And so she spent a year on slower sliders thinking that it was safer because it was less slippery. But the reality is, like, they're all slippery. So if you step on them wrong, you're going to slip and, and that's it. But what she found after that first year, she moved into a quarter inch and she realized, oh, that actually made it easier for her to learn, because as she's pushing out of the hack, she's not having to focus on shoving herself out so hard. She can focus more on balance and form and accuracy and all of the things that go into making a shot really good instead of just focusing on pushing herself out. So I do usually focus or recommend to everybody that, you know, whatever works within your budget, get the fastest slider that you can. Now, all of that said, I think it's going to get more interesting over the next couple of years because I am, as we continue to work on shoes, I'm looking more and more at the biomechanics behind curling specifically, so that you're not just looking at, okay, well, here is a standard shoe outsole and I'm going to slap a slider on there. I want to make sure that we've got stuff that focuses on what makes a good curling shoe. And so you want to make sure that, you know, you've got the right positioning, you've got the right drop from heel to toe. And I don't want to go into all the details and give out all my secret sauce, but, like, I think you're going to see in maybe 2 to 3 years that Goldline and Hardline will continue to come out with new shoes that get more technical in nature that might be targeting more of that high performance curler. And then we'll still have the existing Momentum series, the existing Hardline shoe, and even the Goldline G50, which, hey, if you're just a rec player, that's going to be fine for you. You're going to get by with it just fine. But there will be more technical shoes that will come out that, like, if you're really looking to take your performance to that next level, yes, you want to make sure that you get the one that's the more technical shoe that will help with performance.
So when you're in that process, when you're designing, how much does skill level go into account in the design phase? Like, I would imagine you're working with some of the teams that the elite level teams that you're partners with, that they will give feedback. And I would imagine too, like, anyone who's a tuck thrower would probably have very different requirements and requests than someone who's not a tuck thrower. But are you also bringing in rec players to as part of your testing process and to make sure that that market is being served as you are designing these new products?
Absolutely. I am talking to anybody who will talk to me about shoes. So we do definitely talk to a lot of those elite level curlers that we're sponsoring. But, you know, whether it's talking to somebody like Kevin Martin or Scott Powers, who are big wholesale customers of ours, and gathering their feedback from all of the customers they see. But you'll also see me on Reddit or on Discord or on Facebook talking to different curlers at all kinds of different levels. And I'm always asking for, okay, what is your feedback? What are you looking for in an ideal curling shoe? And especially on those threads where people are like, oh, yeah, the first thing that I recommend as a curling shoe is that you should get a custom shoe. And I'm like, oh, okay, so if you want a custom shoe, why is that? What are you getting from a custom shoe that you're not getting from a purpose-built curling shoe? And then I'm trying to incorporate all of those different ideas into making an even better curling shoe. And so that's always where my focus is in trying to gather that feedback from anybody who will talk to me about it, really.
I'll tell you, my feedback, I would be colors. Give me more color options on the shoes. I like bright color shoes. I'm in on that. Now, I'm wondering, you know, again, I know you guys sponsor a lot of folks. Hardline, of course, had a lot of deals with elite level teams. Do you notice any sort of downflow? And again, I don't expect you to give me any specific numbers, but any downflow effect of, like, all right, Team Homan, I believe, is a Goldline team. They're very successful. you know, when they come off these world championship wins, is there any tangible, do you notice that tangible effect that rec level players are saying, well, Rachel and the team are throwing with gold line brooms and gold line products, that we want that. Like, is that something that you're noticing at the rec level, that the elite teams are having that impact?
So yes, but I also want to say it's not a homogenous group. So not everybody takes it the same way. And the way I always position it is that there is a group of curlers, a segment of curlers, who absolutely pay attention to that. And that is supremely important to them. And they see, like, hey, Hardline's got 80% of the guys that are over in the Briar. Or last year when the Impact head really took off in the Briar, they absolutely noticed that. And we see an influx as a result of that. But there is also a very large segment of recreational curlers who not only couldn't tell you what Omen is using or what Gushu is using, they probably couldn't even tell you what's in their own locker.
Right.
So it really comes down to, for a lot of those people, availability and pricing and just making sure that they can get the products and that it services their needs, right? So, and that's, I think, where Hardline and Goldline really diverged over the years. And we always sponsored a segment of teams and made sure that there were some teams who were using our product at all levels, because it was important to validate the product. Like, the product is good enough for anybody to use, no matter what level you're playing at, whether you're stepping on the ice the first time, you're competing for the Olympic gold, you're aspiring to get there at some point. You could use our product no matter what level. Whereas Hardline took a very different approach, and they went after, no, if you are going to curl competitively, you should be using our product. And so it's two different approaches. It speaks very well to different segments of the market, and they both are valid approaches depending on who you're going after.
Now, you mentioned the Briar last year. Of course, we had basically Broomgate 2.0 last year. I don't want to get too much into the weeds of what happened with that, but do you think that those debates, those controversies, do they matter to the average rec player? Because I will say, for me, I gladly used the Norwegian broomhead last season and had no qualms about doing so. So, you know, I'm not overly concerned about what I'm using. I'm convinced that what I'm doing is, you know, I'm not Ben Hebert, right? I can't manipulate the stone nearly the same way that they can. So I'm not overly concerned about it. But in your experience talking to folks at the rec level, are they tracking that? And does that influence maybe what they're going to do with their equipment purchases?
Yeah, I mean, what an interesting way of thinking about it, right? Because I was talking a few minutes ago about how on the shoe side of things, we work on more technical shoes for the high level, whereas it's almost the inverse on the brooms.
Right, yeah.
So on the brooms, yeah, you get the much more effective equipment down at the recreational level. And I think that is appropriate. If you walk into most curling clubs, your average rec curler is not going to be able to sweep like a Ben Hebert would, for example. And so, yeah, you want to put a more effective tool in their hands. And it's the same in a lot of other sports. The example I always give is, if you look at baseball, you know, you can use an aluminum bat down in the recreational level, but at some point you get to a competitive enough level where it's like, okay, well, the aluminum bat's got to come out and the wooden bat goes in, and that's appropriate for the level that you're playing at. And I think the same is true for curling. Like, yeah, you probably should at some point, if you are getting pretty competitive and you're playing a pretty competitive league, maybe you shouldn't use that harder foam that we saw last year. And maybe you should consider using a different sleeve or a different product just to even the playing field, especially if you know the mechanics behind directionally sweeping and you know what you're doing out there on the ice. Maybe you should use something that's not going to necessarily carve a path that's going to allow you that joystick control. But if you're not curling at that level, why wouldn't you use the most effective thing? It's going to make you more effective for your recreational league.
Yeah, it's like in golf too, right? Let the amateurs use those long putters that they anchor, and like, let go for it. It makes it more fun. You're better. Like, who does it hurt
exactly,
ultimately? So I agree with you 100% on that one. Does it though affect at all product development, say with broom heads, knowing that at the elite level there's going to be some limits? but the rec level player might want that, like the firmer head. So when you're thinking about where to invest in terms of the development, are we thinking of still going beyond the regulations that World Curling has set up so that rec level players can have access to better equipment?
It is a really interesting question. And I don't think that we've gotten to the point yet where we have to worry about that. We have been pushing the limits on performance to try and maximize it to the nth degree as much as we possibly could. And then we're forcibly made to retreat and say, that actually went too far. We've got to dial it back, which naturally created this nice divide where we've got things that are World Curling approved that are great at the more competitive level. And we've got the other stuff that went too far, but is perfect for a recreational player. So we've never gotten to that point in broom development where we've had to say, okay, look, the high performance level is going to stay where it is, but we can continue development and continue to push the limits on the recreational side of things. And we might get there now because, like, I think that we've sort of maxed out what you can do at an acceptable level for high performance curling and really competitive curling. And so if we're going to continue development, that might have to start focusing on the recreational level and looking at, okay, what are additional things that would be acceptable at the recreational level without crossing that line and going too far on it.
Sure. Yeah. Cause even at the rec level, if you push it too far, it could get to the point where it's that joystick control that you want to stay away from. Right.
That's
so
right.
even without the technique and the strength, maybe that some of the elite level players have, you still definitely don't want that at the rec level.
I had somebody once recommend to me, like, well, why don't you think about doing something that would be a heated pad or something like that?
Right.
Because we know that the reason you're sweeping is you're trying to melt the ice just that little bit so that you can go longer and further. And it's like, well, geez, you wouldn't have to heat it very much before you would really make an impact on the ice. And then you have to worry about, not only is it too much control, but are you going to damage the ice and what are going to be the other repercussions there? So yeah, there are things you could do that would cross that line. And I just want to make sure we don't go too far.
Yeah. Yeah, a heated pad. That's a way, Pete, for you to get your tires slashed by every ice maker across the country. Like, no, none of them are going for that. Like, come on. So other than the obvious of you would recommend Goldline and Hardline products, what would your advice be for rec players, especially maybe new players, in selecting equipment? What should they be looking for in equipment to make sure that they're buying the correct stuff and using the correct equipment for their skill level?
So first things first, if you have to select, where are you going to start? What's going to be the first piece of equipment that you buy? I would say shoes are the first one because a lot of clubs will have club brooms available that you can borrow. But if you're going to borrow footwear from them, you're just going to get a step-on slider or a slip-on slider. And those items serve a purpose, but you're not going to get the best performance out of them. You're not going to be as stable on the ice, and it's just not going to be as good as an experience. If you're really starting to get into curling and you want to invest into anything, start with shoes. And as I was saying, start with whatever the fastest slider is that you can get that meets your budget. And if you can, look at one of the options that's got replaceable sliders, so that if you do have to start with something that's not quite as fast on day one, you don't have to replace the whole shoe if you want to go up to another speed. You can just pull the slider off and put another one on. It makes it a lot easier to upgrade as you move forward. And then the second one would be the broom before you start worrying about, you know, gloves and pants and all that. As long as you're not wearing jeans, you'll be all right. And I mean, depending on where you curl in the country, because I know it's a lot colder out west, you can probably get by without gloves for a while. But the shoes and brooms are going to be the most important to get you started.
Yeah, I would say pants, make sure you have some flexibility in the crotch area. Like, that's really the key to it, for sure.
If you can get down into a lunge, you'll be all right.
Yes, absolutely. And I'll tell you, I do have gold line pants that I bought in probably 2010 that had little pinstripes on them. And I get compliments about them a lot, just the style of the pin. They're very classy.
Yeah, those are the mojos.
Really enjoy those. And they've really held up quite nicely. I have to say. So really good pants. And then just for rec level players, people who have been playing a long time, I'm sure a lot of folks just use the same things, like like same thickness of slider, that kind of stuff. But for a 1 to 2 time a week player, is there a way, like if you haven't really been thinking a lot over the last 5-10 years, like how would you tell somebody to maybe do an inventory of their equipment just to make sure that they're using the best equipment for their skill level?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. It's always hard to evaluate from the outside looking in with a hypothetical of what equipment should you be using as an individual. But if you're thinking about that longevity and, you know, maybe it's been a few years, really what you should be looking at is how is your equipment holding up? And so is your gripper starting to flake at all, or is it rubbing really smooth? Any point where it's starting to deteriorate over time, it's not like other sporting equipment. Like, hey, if you're wearing really old basketball shoes, like who's that really hurting? Right. But in curling, it's a couple things that it is hurting. Because one, if it's dropping little pieces onto the ice, even the smallest little bit of rubber that came off of your shoe or your gripper could really impact the game if that gets picked up by a rock as it's going down the ice. So you want to make sure that nothing is flaking off or breaking off. But then it also becomes a safety concern, right? There is a really big safety component to curling. You are on ice that is designed to be very slippery. It's not just regular ice. It's very slippery ice. And so you want to make sure that you are secure while you're out there. And that just means reviewing your equipment and making sure that it is secure. And then also, if your broom pad is getting so old that it's picking up little pieces of dirt or it's black, like just replace it. Most recreational pads that are out there, I know on the Gold Line side, you're probably getting about 25 games. So if you're curling once a week, you know, get a new pad each season. The Hardline ones, because they use a different material, they do actually last a little bit longer. So you might get a year and a half or 2 years out of it before you have to look at switching that. But yeah, you want to make sure that you're not picking up that debris. Because again, you could drop that onto the path of the ice. Your ice maker's not going to love you. People you're playing with are not going to love you. But then you could also start scratching the ice, and that could have all kinds of weird effects that you're not sure exactly how that rock's going to move depending on what you picked up there. So it's just important to make sure that you don't let your equipment get too old.
And then just finally, because you mentioned safety, I am of the position that within my lifetime, helmets will be mandatory. And if not helmets, at least, you know, those hats that you guys make that have some of the padding, and especially in the back of the head for safety. And I think it was somebody from Asham. I read an interview with them once that said they can tell when there's been an incident at a club because orders start to come in. From a community, but what is your position on helmets and or just sort of protective headwear in general? And I feel like it's better now than it was even 2 years ago, just stylistically, from what it was. But like, how do you guys approach headwear and head safety?
Yeah, so we see the exact same thing that you're just mentioning, that you had seen an article from Asham or a comment from Asham about it all the time in our store. And when I say all the time, at least once per season, maybe a couple times per season, we will have a rush in the store of people buying headgear, like in a particular day. So you'll have, you know, 5, 10, 20 people come in and buy something. And it's usually by the third or fourth person that you realize what's going on. And it's all the people who are on the ice the night before when they saw somebody fall and crack their head on the ice. And so, yeah, we strongly recommend, and I've said this for years, I've put out blog posts that say this, I've said it on social media, I will continue to beat this drum. I don't care if you're wearing our protective headgear or somebody else's protective headgear, you should be wearing something while you're out on the ice, because anybody can fall. We all will remember that time that Gushu even slipped and fell. Like, anybody can fall and hurt themselves on the ice. And you should do something to protect yourself, because those injuries, sometimes it's not just a concussion you have to worry about. It's cracking your skull on the ice and how bad that could be. And so wear something that is protective. It does get a little more controversial though, when you start talking about, you think that at some point in our lifetimes, it will be mandated, because I don't disagree. Like, I think it should be, but it's really tricky because there's no standard to mandate it to. Right. There is no CSA standard. There's no international standard. There is no headgear standard anywhere on the planet for curling. Mm-hmm. And those standards are all very sport specific. So you can't just say, oh, I'm going to take my hockey helmet and I'm going to mandate that everybody has to wear a hockey helmet, because that may or may not be appropriate for curling. Nobody's officially done the testing on that. And the reality is, developing even a CSA standard in Canada, let alone like an ASN test or anything like that for international, you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars to develop that. And nobody's selling hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of helmets in the curling market. So it's a really hard one to sort of navigate. And I know, you know, I've talked to people at Curling Canada, I've talked to people in World Curling, and nobody's willing to take this on at this point, just because it is cost prohibitive to develop anything. So we all know that you should be wearing something, but it's hard to regulate it other than to strongly recommend it and say, you know, put something on that you know will be safe.
Yeah, I agree. It's a good message. Yeah, I didn't thought about some of those logistical and other issues that would be related to developing a universal standard. But yeah, really, really good points there. So, Pete, if people want to check out the Goldline products, the Hardline products, obviously you mentioned storefronts, but what's the best way for them to keep up with all the developments going on across the company?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So we've got obviously the two main websites, goldlinecurling.com and hardlinecurling.com. You can connect with us on social on either website. Both brands have their own separate social media. So whatever platform you want to be on, you'll find us out there. You can also, like I mentioned, you can look for me out on Reddit. I spend quite a bit of time there and in that sub. And they know to tag me all the time. So if you want to talk to me specifically, you can get me on there as well. But yeah, we're available on whatever platform you're looking for.
All right. Really appreciate you taking the time to join us tonight. Pete Sounsted from Goldline Curling and Hardline Curling. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks, Sean.
So there you have it. My chat with Pete Townsend, and I thank him so much for his time. Hope you enjoyed that one. I know I certainly did. And with that, going to be it for this week. So I'll say thank you so much for listening, everybody. If you have not yet, please do subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Like, rate, comment, all that good stuff helps other people find the show, keeps us growing. Of course, head on over to gameofstonespod.com. All past episodes are there, plus a link to the merch. We're on the socials at Game of Stones Pod, except for Facebook, where we're Game of Stones Podcast. And if you want to let us know what you want to hear on the show, gameofstonespodcast@gmail.com. Hopefully Scott will be back with us next week. He should be. We are in the midst of the World Series as I record this. I made it to the end of Game 3. I'm recording this about half hour before first pitch of Game 4. So I made it. And my last text in the family text that we have was 2:51 a.m. And I'm kind of proud of that. And I'm also mildly concerned that, you know how when you're streaming and stuff, the TV asks you, are you still there? Yeah, that the TV asked me that a couple times during that game, but saw every pitch of it. And, you know, Blue Jays lost, so disappointed in that. But at some point, you're just kind of excited at what's happening, and that in all likelihood, this is kind of a once-in-a-lifetime surreal experience, that it's 2 a.m., and I'm watching this World Series game that my team is involved in, the team that I follow. Like, it was really, really strange. And when it was over, I didn't have that much trouble going to sleep either, right? Like, normally if, you know, the team you're following, they have a tough loss, sometimes that can be tough, you know, you feel it. But when it's 3 o'clock in the morning, there you go. Just turn it off and go to bed. And the great thing about baseball is that there's always another game tomorrow, of course, till there's not another game tomorrow. But in this case, there was and is another game tomorrow. So we'll see what happens with the World Series. So if you're following along, hope you are enjoying it. And we will be back with you again next week to talk more curling. But until then, keep those brooms on the ice and don't dump that insert.
Make the final.